ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Central consideration in Vedic culture, the consideration of purity and impurity. Everything we use, everything we do, and our very selves should be pure. The purpose of Vedic culture is purification. Purification is a means to the end, which is liberation. Liberation means being situated in our constitutional position, muktir hidvanyata rupam swarupena vyavastiti. So the goal of life is liberation, which means ultimately Krishna consciousness. For that, one should be pure. All the rituals that are performed, even in karma kanda, requires a very high level of purity, even though karma kanda doesn't directly bring us to Krishna consciousness. But purity is required there also. Karmakanda rituals, that also means offering. Ultimately everything should be offered to Krishna. In Karmakanda there's some training in offering with the idea of getting something back. But at least the beginning is there to offer. The animals, they simply take. They don't offer. They may offer something to their children. Or some kinds of animals, they have a society, like ant society, dolphin society. They work cooperatively. But there's no sense of offering to a higher being. Maybe you could say among the ants and bees, everything is done for the pleasure of the queen. But it's not a very developed idea. Even karma kanda, it's not a very developed idea. But the beginning is their offering. Offered to some being, transcendent being. In one sense, the demigods are also, they're transcendent to the performers of karma kanda. Performers of karma kanda rituals, they're transcended in the sense that they are above the platform of the earthly human beings. And although in previous ages, when very pious kings, very great performers of karma kanda rituals used to perform sacrifices, sometimes the demigods would personally come to accept their offerings, but generally they don't. So karmakanda, that means we're offering to someone who we can't see, their demigods. So that the beginning is there of accepting an authority who we can't see directly with our eyes, but whose presence and presence in our life, whose existence and whose presence in our life by their subtle control is accepted. The need to offer something to them. So the idea is there that these transcendent beings, beginning with the demigods and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they should be approached in purity. They're superior to us to their purity. Therefore we have to be pure to approach them, and everything we worship them with should be pure. The place should be pure. The time should be pure. Everything should be pure. So basically everything in this material world, most things, they are impure. So everything we use has to be purified. How to purify? There are different ways of purifying different objects. Some idea has been given here. In Hari Bhakti Vilas you will find much more extensive and specific lists of how different things should be purified. Different metals. Metal objects, they can be purified by heating in fire, or they can be purified by burying in the earth for some time. Wool can be purified by putting in the wind. In Gita, Krishna says, Pavanam Pavanam Smi, of purifiers and in the wind. The very name, Pavana, of the wind, one of the names of the wind, suggests its purifying quality. Other cloths, cotton cloth, can be purified by washing and then drying. But if it's washed by a professional laundryman, then it's not considered pure. because the laundry man himself is generally not very pure or high class. And these are different ways things are purified. An important purifier is time. Things become purified by time. Even if something is impure, just if it's left, just for instance, something becomes impure. One of the most important contaminating agencies is touch. If something is touched, just like if something is touched by stool, it becomes impure. If something is touched by a low-class person, it becomes impure. Why is that? Because a low-class person is generally eating meat, drinking wine, or is in low consciousness. So just by touch, by the touch of a low-class person, it becomes contaminated. Generally, women are considered to be impure, because women in the age of non-contraception and abortion are generally having children. So children are impure because they have no idea. They're not, young children, before they're trained, they're always putting their hands in their mouths, passing stool here and there, slobbering. You know what that means? Old things coming out of their mouths. So to touch a child, you become impure. Women always have to hold children. So women are also impure. Especially they can be purified by bathing. That means if they're initiated, they can cook at home, not in the temple, at home. They can cook for the home deity, Shalagram. But then during their menstrual period, they're most impure. But they become purified by their menstrual period. It said a woman is purified by her menstrual period. All the bodily contaminations come out. So after her menstrual period, she's considered pure. That is also the time for procreating children, after the woman's menstrual period. That is an auspicious time for procreating children. The time that is purified, things that become impure by touch, if nothing else touches them for a long time, then they become purified. Just like the earth may become impure by, for instance, if some offensive activity takes place, or if there is slaughter of animals. Of course, some things are very impure. They may take a long time to become purified. If there's battle and there are many ghosts in that place, then it's very difficult for the place to become purified, even after a long time, because ghosts stay for a long time. We have heard at our ISKCON Hyderabad temple, that site, formerly there was a well. You heard this? There was a well there, in which there were so many, it was a Hindu-Muslim riot, and so many dead bodies were thrown in there. So many ghosts. Does that explain anything? So the atmosphere. So that's why even to build a temple, you generally won't do it in an impure place like that. If it's very impure, because the disturbing element is there. Krishna is always pure, but we may not be so pure. If there's very disturbing elements, then why the purification has to be there is not only for the sake of cleanliness, but for purification of consciousness also. That's why simply taking a bath, that's purifying in one sense, it cleanses the body, but it's not a complete purification in itself. After taking bath, one has to be properly purified. One has to put on fresh cloth, put on tilak, chant mantras, say achaman, then one is considered purified. It's not simply that by taking bath, you can go on the altar. You also have to say achaman, at least, you put on tilak, then you're considered sufficiently purified. Another point is that if something is impure by touch, if the thing that is impure is still touching it, it doesn't become purified by time. Just like if there's some stool on some cloth, it doesn't become purified. Just say there's some stool on this cloth. Well, the stool's a week old. It's still impure. It has to be washed. Then it can be purified. Or the land, another way the land can become impure is by passing stool in such a place. But in the course of time, that will become purified, because the stool will become merged into the earth. In course of time, even time or any other method cannot purify something that is touched by alcohol. Wine, even Ganga water doesn't purify a pot in which there's been wine. It's so contaminated, so much contaminated, even Ganga water. Ganga, why is that? You may say, well, Ganga is not strong enough to purify. She refuses to purify. Such a bad thing. So time is a purifier. We see that when Maharaj Yudhishthira wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, so huge amounts of wealth were required, because the king has to give any brahmana who comes whatever he wants, he should be able to give him. That's Rajasuya sacrifice. So huge amounts of gold were required. Krishna told Arjuna, you go to this place where formerly one king, Marutta, he performed sacrifices. So many utensils were given in charity in gold, but the brahmanas left them there. They thought, what are we going to do carrying all this gold? What do we need it for anyway? So they left it all behind. So that could be considered that that's impure, that's something which belongs to someone else. But already it's been left behind for a long time. It was probably all those brahmanas must have died in the meantime. Even not. They rejected it, they left it. So in the course of time it's purified. So that could be used to give to others. That could be, if no one has claimed it for a long time, then the king rightfully can claim it. So Maharaj Yudhishthira, as the king, he took that and he distributed that in charity. So cleansing, kalena, snana, shochabhyam, samskara, purificatory ceremonies. Everyone is born in this world. Janmana jayati shudra. Everyone is born shudra. Even those who are born in Brahmin families, even high class Brahmin families. Even the garbhadhan samskara is done before the birth, still everyone is born as a shudra, because samskara bhavatvija. It's only when one has the samskara, the purificatory ceremony, upanayanam, one is accepted as a human being when he accepts initiation. Otherwise one is not considered properly a human being. As a matter of custom or formality, one is accepted as a human being, but not actually properly. One is not actually a human being until he accepts an acharya, because human life is meant for elevation to Krishna consciousness. So without an acharya to guide one, then his human life is unfulfilled. That's why in Vedic culture everyone has to have a guru. The antyajas, that means the lowest classes, they may be living, just like in India, there are the caste people, and there are the outcast. Antyaja means they're born outside. They're born outside the Vedic culture. That means tribals, the jungle, people living in the jungle, they're not actually considered properly human, because they don't have training and they don't have an acharya to guide them. So you see that everyone accepted an acharya. The acharya of the Pandavas was Dhaumya. Actually they also didn't have. Then one, who was that? One rishi advised that you have to have an acharya to guide you. Now that means in all the rituals, there's so many different rituals. Here it's discussing samskara. So every family would require a family priest. Traditionally, the families, they would have a family baba, then a family washerman, more well-to-do families. So that, because they'd be a big family, joint family. So they'd have family baba. It means he might not be the baba only for their family, but whenever they had any shaving, then this baba will do. They'll call to the home, they will do. Then family washerman, Maybe big family, generally joint family, then they may have a washerman only for their family. Then there'll be the family priest. And if it's an important family like the Pandavas, then he may be the priest specifically for the Pandavas. Or otherwise he may be a village Purohit, you know, for several families, not too many. Because there's a lot of things to do. Priest is a busy job. There's a lot of work to do. He has to perform all the different sanskars for the different children. He has to give astrological calculations for different things. He has to give advice on the basis of Shastra, what to do, what not to do. He'll recite different, daily he'll recite from the Shastras. And then on special festivals, he'll perform all the different ceremonies, and there are many festivals. Generally in Hindu families, they worship all different demigods as well as Krishna. So there'll be so many different festivals. And at every festival, he'll have to explain what is the meaning of this festival according to Shastra. So Brahmana meant he had to be very highly learned to be a Purohit. So in this way, every family would have an Acharya who would give guidance, and among them is the sanskaras, which is mentioned here. The purificatory ceremonies. These are generally performed for, many of them are performed in childhood. In pregnancy, pre-pregnancy, garbhadhan sanskar. The pre-impregnation ceremony. Then during pregnancy, simantonayana, the lady is fed whatever she likes, whereas generally during pregnancy they have to be very careful what they eat. Then here it's being described jata karma, when the child is born the umbilical cord is cut. And generally either at this time or a little later, anaprashana, when they give the first grains, then there's namakaran, the name is given. Otherwise, often you'll find the child is born and for maybe for some months they don't have any name. Then when the time is given, correct time, they'll have annaprashana and then the name, or several names. Generally in Hindu culture, everyone will have several names, not only one name. You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was given the name Vishvambha, Nimai, then so many other names may come. Shachi Sutta, Shachi Tanaya. So many names will be there. Generally in the Brahmin families they'd have a regular name they were known by, and some other they'd have a secret name also, which only a few people would know. And that would be used for sanskars and different ceremonies like that. But otherwise not generally used. And they may have a nickname also. A common name they're known by. Just like if someone has a... That we also see if someone has a long name like Gopijana Vallabha. It may be very long, so they may be called something, some short name, nickname. And they may use, just they say Gopi or something. Short. So many names may be there. That's the Namakaran ceremony. So sanskara, by sanskara, one becomes purified. Different purificatory ceremonies. The last, you go through childhood, and then the last is the Vivaha sanskara. One is purified by marriage. One is supposed to enter the Grihastha Ashram for purification. That's also conducted in childhood, generally. Nowadays, maybe later. Then after that, especially for the brahmanas, there is the sannyas, taking sannyas. So these are different purificatory ceremonies. Then, by tapasya, that is also purificatory. Because everyone in this material world is committing sinful activities. So tapasya, or austerity, that is meant for purification from sinful reactions. That also is meant to purify the mind. That the mind becomes purified by performing austerities. The idea is that by performing austerity, the mind can become very strong and fixed. Of course, if one simply performs austerities without fixing the mind, only physically he performs it, it's not very helpful. Just like, for instance, if someone is performing Ekadashi fasting, but all the time he's thinking, how many hours till I break the fast, and we're going to have a good feast, it's going to be really great, I'm really going to enjoy it. There's not much use to such fasting. Fasting, one should fast and perform that austerity for the pleasure of Krishna, and the time saved from eating and sleeping should chant Hare Krishna. But if he's simply thinking, well, we'll have a good feast, or how much longer to go, it's not much purification. Not very long. Then, by austerity the senses become purified. Then ijaya, by worship, the brahmanas become purified. Now this is very interesting, because the brahmanas, they're generally considered pure. Brahmanas are called shukla or sharma, which means pure, white. They're supposed to be pure. But anyone in this material world, they're impure. Otherwise, what are we doing in this world? There may be a few people who are born, who come to this world to purify it. Krishna comes to this world to purify it. Great, highly powerful, saintly persons, Prabhupada, came to this world to purify it. He's not impure. But others, it's understood that everyone is born in this world, Icchā Dvesha Simuttena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sargayanta. Everyone is born due to material desires, enviousness, beginning with envious of Krishna. In this way everyone is bewildered. So even when one may be a brahmana, he may be bewildered. He may be on a lesser stage of bewilderment. In other words, he may be studying the Vedas. If he's not studying the Vedas, there's no real meaning to him being a brahmana. He's not simply born in a brahmin family. He should at least be studying the Vedas. But then he may be completely bewildered about what is the purpose of the Vedas. Just like those who follow Karma Kanda, those who are followers of Jaimini, they study the Vedas, they are Veda Vada Rata. They're very much stuck up on what the Vedas say. The Vedas say, mostly the Vedas are concerned with going to the heavenly planets, enjoying life. So they say, that's the purpose of the Veda, you see? All the Vedas, they're mostly talking about performing sacrifices and enjoying life in future. So Jaimini says, yes, this is the purpose of the Vedas. You see, all the Vedas, mostly they're saying that. There's some funny things that talks about renunciation and giving up karma kanda. That's only a little bit. That the main section of the Vedas is in performing sacrifices and enjoy. So Jaimini, he says that this part about renouncing, and that's only for people who can't perform, who are like, just like blind people or lame people. So for them, that's for them. That's a consolation prize for them, Jnana Kanda. But the real purpose of the Vedas is to enjoy life, go to the heavenly planets. So even Jaimini, at least he's following, at least he's on a very material platform. But at least he's studying the Vedas. So even Karma Kandi are brahmanas, because to do that they have to perform different rituals, so they're somewhat purified. So a brahmana is considered pure, even if he's completely misunderstood the purpose of the Vedas. Even Prabhupada, he would offer respect to someone, any saintly person will offer respect to one who's actually a brahmana, even if he's not a Vaishnava. Just the fact that they're at least superficially following the Vedas and performing rituals, that is something better than the ordinary person. So that's something to be respected. But unless one is 100% Krishna conscious, he's not fully purified, even if he's a highly qualified brahmana. Therefore, shatkarma nipano vipra mantra tara visharada avaishnava gurur nasyat. Even if one is expert in performing different, in reciting different mantras and performing different tantras. Tantra means different rituals. Shatkarma nipanova. Even if he's very expert in all these different things, if he's not a Vaishnava, he's not fit to be a guru. A Vaishnava swapacha guru. Even if one is born in the most contaminated, low-class family, If he's a Vaishnava, he should be a guru. Vaishnava Shvapacha Guru. So, what is implicit here is that even if one is a Brahmana, he's considered pure generally, but he also needs to be purified. Means he's pure, yes, relatively pure, but not fully pure, unless he comes to the platform of being 100% Vaishnava. So, Ijaya, by worship, a Brahmana becomes purified. You want to turn this over? As soon as you're recording it, might as well turn it over. So by worship, a Brahmana becomes purified. Generally, worship is performed by Brahmanas. They'll perform worship their own. They'll perform for their own benefit and for the benefit of others. So that worship is that purifies them. Actually, that worship should be performed in purified consciousness. The Brahmana is studying the Vedas. So, why should he perform the worship rather than others? Because, one reason is because he performs purificatory rituals, and also because he studies the Vedas. Not everyone is allowed to study the Vedas. There's a reason for that. It's said that Shudras shouldn't study the Vedas. Why is that? Because one who's in the consciousness of a Shudra, then if he studies the Vedas, then he'll misunderstand. And that you see in the modern age. We have so many ridiculous misinterpretations of Shastra. So one who's actually in purified consciousness and is trained by a competent acharya, then he can understand he should be able to understand the purpose of the Vedas. So then his worship will be fruitful. Otherwise, if one is performing worship, but he has a worship begins with study of the Shastra. That's why you'll find in deity worship, part of deity worship is study of the Shastra. That's a compulsory duty for a pujari, is to study Shastra. Because if he doesn't study Shastra, to study and to hear Shastra. Because if he doesn't, then he may be worshipping, but it'll only be like a formality or a ritual. He won't understand who he's worshipping or why he's doing what he's doing. That we see in the modern age, you see so many professional pujaris, they're just ringing around, ding, 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 ding. Or some mantra, they'll give you some mantra in there. They'll recite some mantra for you, ask them what it means, they don't know. It's just that my father taught me and I'm saying. It's just like you see, there's family barba, by caste someone's barba caste, by caste someone is potter caste, by caste someone is thief class. There's so many different, by caste. So someone may be priest caste, but they have no idea what they're doing. So that isn't purifying. That kind of worship is not very purifying. But the Brahmanas become purified when by their study, by their cleansing, by their reciting of mantras, they come to the actual purpose, which is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then everything they do becomes fruitful. So Brahmana becomes purified by worship. Dana, charity, wealth becomes purified by giving in charity. Generally wealth is, very often wealth is attained by illicit means. Or even if it's not attained by illicit means, to have more wealth than others is also not very fair. Why should you have more than others? So either licitly or illicitly acquired, wealth becomes purified by charity. This Prabhupada explained once in relationship to Marwaris. Prabhupada explained that in business, all cheating. Everyone knows if you're doing business with a Marwari, all cheating. But they give profusely in charity because they have the idea that we've earned money by cheating means that we have to purify, we have to give charity. So giving in charity is required. Actually, it's sinful to have excess wealth. Nowadays in the modern age, the idea is to get more and more and more and more money. But according to the Vedic conception, it is sinful to have more wealth than you need. Of course, the king may have much wealth, but he should stock greens for the sake of distributing in times of need. And if he has lot of money, that should be used for religious purposes. That's why any king, when he gets a lot of money, he should, actually a king should acquire a lot of money. If he's any king worth calling a king, sometimes there may be a king of 5 villages, not much of a king, pre-independence India. There are many such kings in the princely states. So, but a real king should be, if you have plenty of money. Yagyad?
Karma
Sambhava. Yeah. That rains come from Anadvavanti Bhutani, that rice or food grains are produced from rain. Then, Yagyad Bhavati Parajanya Bhakti. Rain comes from sacrifices. And yagya karma samadbhava. And yagya can be performed when one is performing his proper pious activities. So, that's one cycle. How food grains are produced. But then the food grains are offered in yagya. So, if one is, the king has to see that all the citizens are pious. When the citizens are pious and the king is pious, then they perform sacrifice that will make them more pious, and then rains come and grains are produced and they offer more grains. And when they're pious, when people are pious, then the oceans and rivers will produce jewels and there'll be so much wealth and prosperity. So wealth will be produced, but to keep excess is sinful. That should be offered to brahmanas. And that should be offered in sacrifice. Keeping excess wealth, that's very bad. That is, not only is it sinful in itself, but it causes one to be sinful. If one has excess wealth, but he's not trained to use that wealth for performing pious activities, for building temples, for performing sacrifices, for distributing prasada, if he's not trained to do that, then that money, not only by not performing those pious activities will he become sinful. Not only does he miss the pious result, the good karma of the pious activity. Not only does he get a sinful reaction for hoarding wealth, but that money will be used for performing grossly sinful activities. Money that is not used for pious activities is used for meat-eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication, and producing more illicit money. By investment, by making a war against to loot another country. That's why Kali, the personality of Kali, sits in gold in the age of Kali. Otherwise, gold by itself is considered a pure substance. But in the age of Kali, people are impious, so gold is the cause of so many impious activities that we see in modern India. Previously, wealthy people. They used to give in charity and generation after generation, build temples, generation after generation, people were pious. They had this idea. But now the idea is keep your wealth, invest it in more business. Of course, that's also allowed to invest in business, but simply build up more and more and more and more wealth unlimitedly. And everyone has the idea, instead of having the idea of giving or performing sacrifices, everyone has the idea, get more, more, more. You have to show how snappy you are with your Ray-Ban sunglasses and your Levi jeans and acquisition. Acquire more and more for your own sense gratification. You see that Yudhishthira Maharaj, why he was so anxious to get his kingdom back. He said, without getting my kingdom, I can't execute my Kshatriya Dharma. I have to be a king. I have to have some property. I have to have some wealth so I can perform sacrifices and give charity. Otherwise, I can't perform my Kshatriya Dharma. But nowadays the idea is to get money and not use it for charity, not use it for religious charity. Therefore that money necessarily is used for meat-eating, gambling, illicit sex and intoxication. So charity is so important, especially for householders. You'll see even in India today, some idea is that giving charity. If any temple is distributing prasad, then automatically people will come and give grains and money and ghee and so many things. People have the idea, people have the idea that we should give in charity. If there's some nicely run goshala, people will come and give. The idea is if anyone's actually performing auspicious activities and people like to give, still in India, that idea is there. We're making life members all over the world, mostly among Indians, because they have the idea that we should give something for dharma. So that idea is there. Of course, like I'm saying, it's going away now. Prabhupada actually said that at one time. He said that you should make as many life, this was in the 70s, Prabhupada said you should make as many life members as possible, because their children will not be so pious. They won't have the same idea to give in charity as their. First of all, when Prabhupada started the life membership program, he told you go in the bazaar in Indore. That's where the program started. Bazaar means where all the Marwaris are. And bring one man to translate, because that was all Western devotees. Prabhupada said, just show, you see? These are the activities. We're building temples, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're preaching, we're making books. We want you to be a life member. This is the fee, 1,101 rupees. And devotees thought, how is that possible? And who's going to give us 1,111 rupees just by saying this? And they went and they were surprised. For the people they'd never seen before, never heard of them before. And immediately, yes, 1,111 rupees they gave. That was the Marwari. In the beginning, in India, only Marwaris were becoming members, and some Gujaratis. Otherwise, later on, South Indians, Bengalis and others, much later, even in South India, some Chettiyas, some Rao, few here and there, mostly our life member makers in the beginning, they would go immediately, any town, to find where the Marwaris, because they had this very strong idea of giving in charity, because actually Marwaris, they were previously Kshatriyas, Hare Krishna. So then later on they became Baniyas, merchants. So the idea that we should give in charity was very strong, especially among the Kshatriyas. Not so much the Vaishyas, they would give tax to the king and then the king would give charity. And of course, Vaishyas, they would also, any function, any festival, any visitor, any guest who would come, they would look after. Atithi Devo Bhava, that is there in the Vedas, that uninvited guest, not someone who's coming every day just to sit in your home, that's not Atithi, but unusual guest, uninvited guest, they should be treated as God. Even they may be Shudra caste, doesn't matter. If they're coming, they should be fed. You should be given some accommodation. So that idea was there. Giving in charity, very important part of Vedic culture. We see also that even the acharyas in Vedic culture, people are giving to them, but they will also give to brahmanas. You see, if anyone comes and a brahmana comes and recites some shlokas, if he's actually a Vedic brahmana, then an acharya means the head of a mutt, or someone in such a position, he will give, yes, some appreciation, give some silk cloth, give some dhoti, give some money, and appreciate it, because these people are upholding the Vedic culture. Also, when we visit some temples, we can also, even they may be the priests, they may be worshipping demigods or whatever, we can also give some donation. You know, it may not go to the deity, the priest himself will take, but if they're actually worshipping nicely and we can also give, because they're doing, you can give something. When you give to the deity, it's, like I say, it's understood, the priest may take. The deity service will go on, and the priest, he may also take. But you can give something, because he's performing some activities which are purifying the human society. He's upholding the culture in that way. So santushya, by satisfaction, the mind is purified. Generally, the mind is the seat of so many impurities. But if one is simply satisfied, that is most purified. People are asking, Shanti, did you get Shanti? You took to Krishna Bhakti, did you get Shanti? Because that in itself is purifying. That means if one is satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord, that in Gita Krishna says, that one, what is that verse? Whatever comes of its own accord, one who's satisfied with whatever comes, lapa santushto. What's that verse? No, no, it comes. No, well, that's also the Santushta Yanakinacha. Yeah, anyway, I can't remember now. But Krishna says, whoever is satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord, such a devotee is very dear to me. If one is not hankering after this and that, means one is impure. But if one is satisfied with whatever comes, then that in itself is purifying. Otherwise, if you're always thinking, I have to have this, I have to have that, if you're simply satisfied with whatever, if you think whatever God sends, let us accept, then that is pure, that is a practice. One has to practice such an attitude. That is purifying. It's very pleasing to Krishna if one has such an attitude. So dravyani, all material possessions, and the Atma, ultimately everything becomes purified by Atma Vidya, by knowledge of the Self. Everything becomes purified. And one who is actually on the platform of Atma Vidya, then even he can act in what for anyone else would be an impure way, and he remains pure. That's why it's said that for sannyasi, there are no rules of eating. He can eat anywhere. Generally, one has to be very strict in his eating. He should not accept food from an impure person. He should only, even charity, one should not accept from an impure person. But for a sannyasi, generally he'll accept from brahmanas, but he can take, he doesn't become contaminated by taking food anywhere. Not that he goes into the Muslim restaurant for his meals, or even the Hindu non-veg restaurant. Generally he'll be very careful what he eats, but just like a sannyasi may be traveling, when he's traveling he'll generally take food in the home of brahmana. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed that. He was staying with in Varanasi with Chandrasekhar, who was a Shudra by caste. There's another Chandrasekhar, his uncle in Navadip, in Mayapur. So he's Chandrasekhar Acharya, Brahmana caste. There's another Lekak Chandrasekhar, writer. That means he would write official documents by hand, of course, because there's no printing press there. So that's considered Shudra caste job. So he was staying in his home, but still, he was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking his meals in the home of Tapan Mishra. Tapan Mishra means Brahmin, Bengali Brahmin, from East Bengal. So he was taking his meals in the home of Tapan Mishra, Brahmin. But he was staying in the home of who was a Shudra, even that was considered sensational. So generally, a sannyasi will take in the home of Brahmana, but then if he's traveling through the jungle, there may be some rishis here and there. Generally the rishis, they live close to a village. If you go deep in the jungle, you won't find brahmanas. You'll find only the tribals. So if you may take some fruits and roots going in the jungle, that if even that is not available, you may accept some food from even the lowest class people. That we see when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going through the Jharikhanda forest, that he would accept food even from the tribal people. And then Pallabhadra Bhattacharya, who was his assistant, would cook them. Even he accepted food from them, but his Brahmana assistant cooked it. So because this sannyasi is on the platform of Atma Vidya, he can eat anywhere. Actually there are many cases in Shastra of Brahmanas even eating dogs and all kinds of things. Not ordinarily, but in a time when there's no other food available, they can eat Vishwamitra. And there's no other food available. He had meat. Even it's described that one rishi, who was that? Bhargava? One of the famous rishis. He was starving. So they had cow. Him and his sons. They had cow's meat. And Prabhupada also said that if there's nothing else available, you can also eat cow. That's allowed by Shastra. Now if you eat cow at any other time, you become highly sinful. But to maintain the body, you may do so. There's one story in the Upanishads of one Brahmana who there was starving. So he went to one richer man who had some food, Vaishya, and said, please give me something to eat. He said, well, the only food, there was a starvation going on in the land. So he said, the only food I have is this right in front of me, which I'm eating now, some beans. So that's the only thing, it's my remnants. He said, give it. So he took it and he ate it. And Brahmana should never take the remnants of Vaishya. But anyway, he did. There's nothing else to eat. So then he went to some distance to where one king was. He heard one king was performing sacrifice. So he said, I'll go there and get some money by being his priest. And he was accepted as the priest, even though there were other priests there. But he said, hey, you priests, you know what you're doing? Do you know when you chant this mantra what the meaning is? And they said, well, we know this. And he said, that's not the meaning. He explained another one. So this way he kicked all the other priests out of the job and he took it up himself. He was more learned than them. So it wasn't considered that he had become, he was fit for the job, even though he had eaten some food which would ordinarily be considered impure. So he can do. He can do. Not in any ordinary time. One who has knowledge, he doesn't become impure by apparently impure activities. So ultimately, if one is chanting Hare Krishna, which is the main purification of all, then theoretically you can do anything else. Because that in itself is so much purifying. It's the most purifying of all purifiers is bhakti, if one is a devotee. Prabhupada said, especially for preachers, those who are preaching, they don't have to follow any rules and regulations. That Prabhupada, when Harikesh Maharaj, Prabhupada is sending him to Russia to preach, he's saying, well, there's no food there, there's only meat. Prabhupada said, eat meat and preach. Of course, there were some things to eat, which were, you could find some things which were vegetarian, difficult as it might have been. I remember flying to India in 19... when was that? Must have been 77. So we stopped in Moscow airport. It was in the summer, and we're in the transit lounge, and it's just huge glass windows, and you can't go outside. And the air conditioning was broken. It was 40 degrees outside. So it was so hot inside. And there was the only non-alcoholic drink in the airport was grape juice, but that was also alcoholic. They said it was non-alcoholic, but it tasted just like wine. It was fermented. The only other thing was the water in the toilet. So it was very difficult at that time to get any pure food. Prabhupada said, go and preach, even if you have to eat meat. Doesn't matter. So Prabhupada once said, he's being asked about chanting 25 rounds on Ekadashi. Prabhupada said, those who are sitting in the temple idle doing nothing, they can chant 25 rounds. Those who are going out to preach, they should go out to preach. Prabhupada said, for a preacher there are no rules and regulations, but don't take it like that, Prabhupada said. Don't think, I'm a preacher, therefore I can do whatever I like. It's very dangerous. If you're actually on the purified platform, then there are no rules and regulations for you. But if there's any contamination, you may think, I can waive all these rules, I don't have to follow, but some effect will be there. Dangerous. Very dangerous. So if one's actually on the platform of Atma Vidya, he's actually fully absorbed in Krishna, then he can flout all rules and regulations. But if you don't, if you're not actually on that platform and you flout the rules and regulations, then you're going to become affected by contamination, by impurity. Sometimes devotees, they lose their faith when they see prominent members of our movement who are considered to be highly advanced falling from their advanced position. So then they start to think, well, maybe Krishna consciousness doesn't work. Actually, that's the proof that Krishna consciousness does work. Because even if you're in a high position, even if you've come so far and done so many things, if you stop following proper sadhana, if you just one of our prominent members of our society, very prominent, fell recently. So he was more involved, he started to become more involved in business and speculative money deals, which is some kind of gambling, Prabhupada said. And he was more involved in this than in preaching Krishna Bhakti and studying Shastra, and wasn't attending any temple programs, and was associating intimately with a woman, even though maybe for health reason. He fell down. So that's the proof that Krishna consciousness works. Because if you don't follow it, then you fall down. That is the proof that Krishna consciousness works. Actually, who's actually on the very high, who's actually fully purified, they could do those things and they wouldn't become contaminated. But one who's actually fully purified, they're interested in Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting Hare Krishna. See, you may do so many things for Krishna. No doubt the intention was to do it for Krishna. But you have to be very, very careful, because Maya is very, very powerful. And even if there's a seed of material desire within the heart, even if you have 99.9% desire to please Krishna, if there's a seed of material desire in the heart, if you deviate from the process of Krishna consciousness, then you'll fall down. John Bharat, the example is there in Shastra. He was in Bhava Bhakti. His stage of absorption was so high, but somehow Maya caught him and he became attached to a deer and forgot his Krishna Bhakti. Therefore, Krishna says in Gita that acts of purification, yajna, dapa, tapa, dana, they should not be given up, because pavanani manishinam, these are the activities which are purifying. So purifying activities should never be given up. Even if one is fully advanced, even then he should perform purificatory activities for the sake of teaching others. Now we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Kalidas, one highly advanced devotee, he used to play dice in jest. He wasn't acting as an acharya. One who's acting as an acharya, he shouldn't do such things. He should set highly exemplary example. Actually, Prabhupada used to take snuff. Do you know what snuff is? It's tobacco that's used for sniffing. And that cleans the congestion. So one of Prabhupada's disciples, he wanted to do this also. It was imitation. Prabhupada said, I'm doing this as a medicinal thing, because sometimes my head becomes unclear and I'm writing my books. He said, but you don't have to do it. He said, nor can you stay up all night like me and write books. You do like that. He was suggesting, if you stay up like me and all night and write books, then if you have a need, you can take snuff. But it's not that Prabhupada took snuff, therefore we should also take snuff. It's called imitation. We should know the difference between following the acharya and imitating the acharya. Just like Prabhupada, he didn't usually come to Mangalarti, but he told his disciples, you should all go to Mangalarti. They may say, well, Prabhupada didn't go. Prabhupada actually once he said, actually I should also go, but at that time I'm writing my books, which is such an important service. So Prabhupada, he didn't need to go for his own purification. And what he was doing, writing his books, is purifying for the whole world. But it's not that we should think, well, Prabhupada didn't go, so I don't have to go. All these things should be understood very carefully. Ultimately, purification means to think of Krishna. And thinking of Krishna is purifying. For those who are not thinking of Krishna, to think of Krishna is purifying. And that purifies our consciousness in such a way that we can... Purification means that we can start to think of Krishna more and more. So these other activities like purification, cleaning, just like you have to be clean in deity worship, you have to be pure to come before the deity. Even to come in front of the deity, we should be bathed, clean, all these things. So that's also required as a matter of respect, our deity worship. If we're not clean, if we're dirty when we come in front of the deity, we pass stool, we don't take bath, and that is an offense So that will have the opposite effect. It's called aparad. Worship is called aradhana. And aparad means the opposite of arad. Means an offense. So purification, purification of body, purification of mind, purification of consciousness, these are all required. All these purifications help us to ultimately become purified so that we can take to and practice Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the means and the end. There are other means also which can help us gradually come to Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, bhakti is only produced by bhakti. One can be a karmi for millions of lifetimes, but unless he gets a touch of bhakti, he can't come to bhakti. It's not that by performing, by being a very pious karmi, that is a qualification for bhakti. But it is a help in receiving the seed of bhakti. The seed of bhakti can be given to a completely impure person, and it can be given to a purified person. Purified means on the platform of karma kanda or jnana kanda. But generally one who is somewhat purified on the platform of karma kanda or jnana kanda, he's more ready to accept that seed of bhakti. For instance, if one already has faith in the Vedas on the karma kanda platform, he may be more ready to hear the message of the Vedas than one who is rejecting that or not familiar with it. All right, I'll finish them. It's almost 9 o'clock. Hare Krishna. Any question? Comment?